And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, for nearly the last 24 hours, a vote-a-rama, as it's being described, is continuing to unfold on the floor of the United States Senate. Looking there live this morning, you can see senators, a couple of them at least, in the chamber, huddling around as amendments to Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill continue to ongo in the United States Senate. That started a little after 9 o'clock yesterday morning. We are also learning this morning as well that just within the last 30 minutes or so, Vice President J.D. Vance has arrived very early, obviously, this morning at the United States Capitol as senators continue to hold this vote-a-rama on Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill. With that, the math and this whole thing is rather interesting as you kind of take a look at what's going on here and what is slated to continue to go on over likely the next couple of hours. The Senate Republicans can afford to lose 3 votes. That's the magic number. With 3 votes being lost, Senator, the Vice President, J.D. Vance, the tie-breaking vote in the Senate, would have the opportunity to cast a tie-breaking vote. So 3 is the magic number. And actually, as we look at this live right now, it appears that somebody is speaking on the Senate floor. Let's dip into this and see exactly what is going on here on the floor of the United States Senate. Let's take a listen.
I think many senators on both sides of the aisle were surprised to learn that this bill includes a $100 million slush fund for OMB.
Senator, wish to call up his amendment?
I will. I call up my amendment, 2585, which I called up about 5 minutes ago, but I'm calling it up again and ask that it be reported by number.
The clerk will report.
The senator from Maryland, Mr. Van Hollen, proposes for himself and others amendment number 2585 to amendment number 2360.
Mr. President, I know it's been a long day's journey into the night, but I think senators were surprised to learn that this bill has a $100 million slush fund directed to OMB. So that would be on top of its existing budget. This is at a time when FEMA grants to many of our states have been canceled, grants for law enforcement have been frozen.
So as you can hear, there's some more grandstanding from Democrats on the Senate floor this morning over Trump's big, beautiful bill, amendments being made on that legislation over the last, I guess it would be over the almost the last 24 hours or so that this process has continued to unfold as we look live at the United States Senate this morning, a couple of minutes after 7 o'clock. So going back to what I was mentioning before the senator from Maryland got up and started speaking, 3 votes is what Republicans can afford to lose in the House. We already know that there's 2. One is going to be Rand Paul out of Kentucky. We'll talk about him in a second. The other is our current sitting U.S. Senator here in North Carolina, Tom Tillis. So those are the 2 votes that we already know are going to be not in favor of this legislation moving forward. We already know those 2 individuals are not going to vote in favor of the legislation. It looks like John Thune is up speaking now. Let's see what he's saying.
Budget needs to identify budgeting and accounting efficiencies in the executive branch. They needed the resources to do it, so I asked my colleagues to oppose this amendment.
Mr. President?
So there's John Thune, as he's essentially been doing all night, telling his colleagues, those Republicans in the House, to vote against this single amendment, as this process continues.
There appears to be. The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Alsobrooks, Ms. Baldwin, Mr. Banks, Mr. Barrasso.
No.
So there's some, I guess, voting going on now on this amendment, which will undoubtedly fail as Republicans continue to hold the majority in the United States Senate. You can see senators walking up towards the dais, not exactly sure what they are doing, maybe getting ready to file additional amendments or put some additional paperwork on the official record. But again, going back to the math, Three votes is what they can lose. Rand Paul in Kentucky is against it. Senator Tom Tillis has already announced he's not going to vote for it. And then, of course, the big news, which we talked about on a special Sunday edition of the show, Senator Tillis announcing that he is not running for re-election. So at this point in time, he is going to presumably, and I don't think it's an unfair thing to assume, that he is going to vote against this and probably many other things that the president has continued to push for in this big, beautiful bill. And he's going to claim, well, he's now calling balls and strikes and he's going to do his whole thing, so on and so forth. So that leaves the question of why the vote on the one big, beautiful bill hasn't happened. And from some of the reporting that I read last night, some additional reporting earlier in the morning, it seemingly indicates that a couple of other senators may be on the fence. They voted for the procedural vote on Saturday to move forward, but they might not necessarily be voting in favor of the legislation itself. Some of those individuals include the likes of Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, who often break with the GOP and vote with the Democrats. Republicans can afford one of those individuals not to vote for the legislation. If there are four Republicans that will not vote for the big, beautiful bill, then the legislation is dead. And I, from all of the reporting that I've watched, Chad Pergram working overnight hours, having listened to some of his reports earlier in the morning, seemingly indicating that a couple of those senators still may be iffy. And obviously the Senate leader in John Thune is not the Republican majority leader, is not going to bring this legislation and set up the process for an actual vote on this if he doesn't have the votes. The House did their job back a couple of weeks ago, sent it off to the United States Senate. And now we're looking at this. The fact that J.D. Vance is in the Capitol, you can imagine that he is going to be probably relaying some messages from President Donald Trump as to why the Republicans in the United States Senate need to vote in favor of this legislation. And of course, the timeline on all of this does continue to be very short. So many modifications made to the bill in the Senate version, fiscal hawks in the House saying that this legislation looks nothing like the bill that they originally passed. So assuming that it passes the Senate within the next couple of hours today, which is what the rumors and rumblings are, Murkowski and Collins will get whatever concessions that they want. They'll vote in favor of it. Tillis and Rand Paul will not vote in favor of it, seemingly no matter what. So that will be one vote more than is needed. J.D. Vance won't have to break the tie-breaking, won't have to be the tiebreaker, and the legislation will move forward. Then that brings forth the question of the House. The president wanted this bill on his desk July the 4th. The seemingly likelihood of that, at least to me this morning, seems incredibly low. Because with these major modifications that have been made in the United States Senate, where Republicans have that essentially 3 or 4 vote majority that they can afford, they do not have that in the House, and we've already seen some rumblings from some conservative fiscal hawks, and then, of course, you've got your typical grandstanders like Thomas Massie, who are not going to vote in favor of this legislation. With it being now the first day of July, July the 1st, assuming the legislation gets passed sometime in the morning hours or early afternoon today, it will make its way back to the House with a very short runway for them to look at this legislation and send it back to President and send it to President Donald Trump's desk for a signature. The likelihood on all of that seems incredibly low by July the 4th. The president in the overnight hours really ratcheting up the pressure on lawmakers, posting around 3 o'clock this morning on Truth Social, quote, "Republicans, the one big beautiful bill, perhaps the greatest and most important of its kind in history, gives the largest tax cuts and border security ever, jobs by the millions, military and vet increases, and so much more. The failure to pass means a whopping 68% tax increase, the largest in history." The president posting that on Truth Social a little after 3 o'clock this morning, with there still at this point no end in sight as to how exactly Republican leaders get all of the votes that they need. We are going to continue to watch this process unfold. Again, the math is very simple. 3 is all that Republicans can afford. That would cause the tie-breaking vote from J.D. Vance. any more than three, the legislation is dead in the water. It will not pass the United States Senate, and it will be a failure of this bill that President Donald Trump has really spearheaded and pushed forward. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, who you just heard from, he is one of the senators from South Dakota, said that Republicans are, quote, figuring out how to get to an end game, but an end to the Voterama has been predicted. It was originally predicted to happen around midnight. Then we were told that it was going to happen around dawn, which was, I guess, what, around 5:30 or so when on the East Coast when the sun started rising. Here we sit a couple minutes after 7 o'clock this morning, and the votes do continue live in the United States Capitol. These amendments continue to get passed, indicating that to this point, Republicans, at least the majority leader and John Thune, has not been successful in convincing Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and maybe a couple of other senators that could be iffy on this legislation that they are going to vote in favor of it. And that's why Democrats over almost the last 24 hours have been able to make various amendments. The vast majority of them have failed, and it's probably the reason why J.D. Vance made his way to the Capitol over the last 30 minutes or so before 6 o'clock this morning, making his way to the United States Capitol in preparation for that tie-breaking vote, as well as preparations to probably continue to whip some of those votes on behalf of the president and the administration as they want to see this piece of legislation go forward. So that is essentially where we stand this morning. Could have something happen over the next little bit here as we are live on this Tuesday morning. We are going to keep a close eye. You can see it in the bottom corner of our screen this morning as the United States Senate does continue in session this morning. This came after a weekend of Senate clerks reading all 940 pages of the bill out loud. That process took just over 14 hours to unfold. And now this Voterama does continue. So we're keeping a close eye on all of the details, and we'll pass all of it or any of it along to you as we get any breaking news this morning on the Nick Craig Show. Obviously, with all of this taking place, Senator Tom Tillis continues to be a major political discussion, not only here in North Carolina, but across the rest of the United States. Yesterday, it was Ken Martin, the head of the Democrat National Committee. We talked about him maybe 2 weeks ago, that New York Times article talking about how Ken Martin, who has only been the chair of the DNC now for about 5 months, is struggling with fundraising, has not reached out to some of their major donors and have made, you know, multi-million dollar pledges to all of these different states, yet they don't necessarily have the money to back up some of those pledges. He had a press call yesterday, a media call on Monday morning, and he said this, quote, "We view North Carolina as one of the top tier opportunities for Democrats in the 2026 cycle. That hasn't changed. In fact, it's become more of a priority for us now with the retirement of Tom Tillis." This has been an interesting, North Carolina is an interesting state for a variety of reasons. But specifically when you look at the United States Senate, Republicans have been very successful in holding U.S. Senate seats here in North Carolina. As we talked about on Sunday, Senator Tom Tillis, who won his re-election bid back in 2020 to continue his term in the United States Senate, only won by 95,000 votes. Now, was about 1.75% is what he won by in 2020. And that race very much came down to the wire with what I would argue is a relatively weak Democrat candidate in Cal Cunningham. That's who he ran against in 2020. A lot of conservative activists across the state of North Carolina, pretty frustrated and pissed off with Tom Tillis back in 2020. And with that, you had many of them sitting that vote out, not voting for the senator, barely squeaking by 95,000 votes statewide to be successful in winning re-election. This, we were looking at a similar, if not worse, situation unfolding this go-around. Tillis has been in hot water over really since the start of this Trump administration. In the early days, reports from the Wall Street, or I believe it was the Washington Post, indicating that he was trying to harpoon the nomination of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, calling, you know, his ex-wife and family members and trying to dig up dirt on Hegseth so he could spike that nomination. That pissed off the Trump, pissed off Trump and the many of the Trump allies throughout Washington, D.C. and here in North Carolina. Some other issues that Tom Tillis has run into over the last couple of months and the last couple of years. And it really came down to, at least for me, where is his block, his base of voters? You've got the Trump fans here in North Carolina, those Republicans that are what I'll call Trump loyalists, stand with the president. They're sure as hell not going to be out in the streets campaigning for Tom Tillis. Then you've got your more, I guess you'd call them more moderate Republicans who still believe, even with Tillis's, some of his squabbles with Trump over the last couple of months, still votes with the administration about 90% of the time. So if these more moderate Republicans that don't like Trump, Tillis isn't anti-Trump through and through, so that voting block is gone. Moderate Democrats aren't going to vote for a Republican, of course, and more progressive Democrats sure as hell aren't going to vote for a Republican. So that left Tom Tillis in this interesting position where there was essentially nobody left. Right, the MAGA base hated him. The moderate Republicans still think he's too cozy with Donald Trump, and Democrats are never going to vote for a Republican. So that leaves Tom Tillis with what? But maybe the more elitist class politician in North Carolina? That's about it. The grassroots doesn't like him. The North Carolina GOP censured Tom Tillis back in 2013, has attempted to censure him multiple times since for a variety of political issues that the senator has unfortunately stepped in. And you know, I did a show on this back a couple of months ago, and the point I made on that was I want to support Tom Tillis. Tom Tillis is a very effective lawmaker. Tom Tillis, for the most part, is very good at his job. I want to support him. And I made that point back a couple of months ago on the show that he makes it damn near impossible to do so. He makes it so incredibly hard to support him. And I can imagine all of those various factors building up. And then, of course, President Trump absolutely torching him on Truth Social on Sunday. All of those things together, well, caused Tom Tillis to announce, hey, I'm no longer running for re-election. This is going to be an open primary. So going back to Ken Martin's call, again, highlighting that now that there is a retirement, you will not have an incumbent on the ballot, which, by the way, is significant when you look at political math and the numbers game that it is winning an election. Being an incumbent and having the ability to be in that position, fundraise in that position, is substantial. This is now why Democrats are eyeing this as a major position for them. Ken Martin's comments reflect a sharp escalation in Democratic interest in North Carolina, which has long alluded to the party in midterm Senate contests. Tillis, a former state House Speaker and two-term U.S. Senator, has been under mounting pressure from the right flank of his party for his bipartisan work on immigration and gun legislation. According to Ken Martin, quote, Tillis refused to stand by and support what he described as a Republican plan to, quote, steal from the working class to give to the rich, which ultimately earned him the wrath of Donald Trump. That's, of course, referring to the commentary over the weekend. Strategists on both sides of the aisle agree that Tillis's retirement has blown open the 2026 race here in North Carolina. Democrat consultant Brad Crone described the shift in tone with one word, opportunity. Crone told the Carolina Journal in an interview yesterday, quote, the Democrats are salivating. They see an opportunity with an open seat that they can compete. That opportunity is historically rare. Democrats' last successful United States Senate bid during a midterm election in North Carolina came all the way back in 1998. Let me read that again for you. Democrats' last successful U.S. Senate bid during a midterm, which is what we're running up to in 2026, came back in 1998. That's when John Edwards defeated incumbent Launch Faircloth. In 2008, a presidential election that brought Barack Obama to the White House, Kay Hagan became the most recent Democrat elected to the United States Senate from North Carolina. However, Tillis would then go on to unseat Hagan in the following election cycle in 2014. Nevertheless, Martin and the DNC insist that the tide is turning in their favor in North Carolina, alluding to the 2024 wins of Governor Josh Stein, Lieutenant Governor Rachel Hunt, and Attorney General Jeff Jackson. The head of the DNC told the media in the press call yesterday, quote, "If you look at the population growth, the demographic shifts, as well as the electoral trends, North Carolina is certainly one of our best opportunities. We won almost every single race on the ballot that we targeted last year in North Carolina, with one notable exception, the top of the ticket." Of course, referring to the presidential race. And, you know, that's, I don't know that, you know, Ken Martin's got to phrase it that way. I wouldn't say that Democrats had an unbelievably successful election cycle in North Carolina. Yes, Josh Stein won. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson was a terrible candidate for Republicans. That's obvious. It's been obvious. And I think the math and the election results show that that was very much the case. So no real surprise there. It was a pretty big upset for Jeff Jackson to win. Unfortunately for former Congressman Dan Bishop, who was running as the Republican in that race, being closely aligned with Mark Robinson, I think absolutely, I don't know if it cost him the election, but it obviously played, and I believe strongly played into his election and the successful election for Jeff Jackson back in November, the lieutenant governor race as well. I mean, you know, Trump carried the state farther than he did over in 2020, but he was just unable to pull more Republicans across the line. And I think that was in large part due to the Mark Robinson controversy. And I bring that up not to beat a dead horse with Mark Robinson, not to shame individuals. Oh, you shouldn't have supported him. I voted for Mark Robinson. He was our Republican candidate. But I bring that up as we, you know, look forward, and we'll talk about some of the potential rumors as to who is potentially running for that position. It is incumbent that Republicans across this state not only support a strong candidate in the primary, but support a candidate that can go up against very strong Democrats. And I say this morning as a plea and a pledge to North Carolinians here across the state. Being Mr. or Mrs. Conservative in the primary and in ginning up the Republican base in a primary does not translate to a general election victory. It just doesn't do it. Now, I'm not saying that you want to vote for or you should vote for a spineless, weak, lame duck Republican. That is not what I'm saying. But there is a difference between supporting a conservative candidate that can win and a conservative candidate that can grandstand. Those are two very, very different things. And, you know, I look at past elections. For example, the election that we just saw in November of last year with Mark Robinson, and I hope it was a learning opportunity for Republicans across the state, that you've got to be careful with who you support in the primary. You may like Mark Robinson. You may have wanted Mark Robinson to become the governor, as I did. I absolutely wanted Mark Robinson over Josh Stein, no question about it. However, unfortunately, the former lieutenant governor was not the best candidate possible for the election. And that was very obvious and very clear as you watched the election results roll in and saw North Carolinians reject Mark Robinson overwhelmingly, handing Republicans the worst gubernatorial loss in this state in over 40 years. 40 years was what that is the last time that a governor race was as lopsided as we saw last year. That has to be a wake-up call. That has to be an opportunity for Republicans to say, we can't repeat that. That it is very possible And I don't say this to be an extremist or say this to try and gin up or fear monger people, but there is a very strong possibility that the Senate race here in North Carolina determines whether President Donald Trump is able to continue to enact his agenda for the next 2 years, or if he becomes a lame duck sitting president with Democrats controlling the Senate. That's not a guarantee, right? We don't have the election results in front of us. We're not in November of next year, but there is a very real possibility that the Republican majority in the Senate runs through, and there's a very strong likelihood that that runs through the state of North Carolina. And so I say that as there's going to be, and there has been a lot of talk, a huge vacuum now in this Republican primary that, you know, supporting the candidate that is the best in the primary is not necessarily the best candidate for the general election. Don't vote for a pushover. Don't vote for a rhino. Don't vote for somebody that's going to stab President Donald Trump in the back. That is not what I'm saying. I don't believe that you need to swallow your morals. I don't believe that you need to swallow your principles to support a candidate. But what you do have to do is make sure that you're supporting somebody and putting your weight behind somebody that can actually win, right? That's what it comes down to. The fact of the matter is that if you can't win, I don't care how strong of a conservative you are. I don't care how closely aligned to Trump you are. If you can't win, it doesn't matter. And it's really that simple. It's not any more complicated than that. If you can't beat a Democrat in the general election, then it doesn't matter how principled you are. It doesn't matter how strong your morals are. If you can't win, then it doesn't matter. And the fact that Republicans are going to have to deal with here in North Carolina is that if Roy Cooper gets into this race, the former governor of this state, Republicans are likely to lose this race, regardless of who the candidate is. Roy Cooper portrays himself as a moderate, governs as a progressive, and has a very high favorability rating here across the state of North Carolina. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to say, oh, well, this is what I agree with. The fact is, that's the case. You don't have to believe me or take my word for it. Take a look, and we did this on Sunday, but we'll do it again. Take a look at the Carolina Journal poll from May, which surveyed a little over 600 voters across the state and asked them what their favorability was of various candidates. And you can look at the math right here. It's very clear. Roy Cooper has a favorability rating amongst Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliateds at 47.5%. Now, compare and contrast that. That is a higher number than the current favorability of Donald Trump. So you've got Republicans that have a favorable image of Roy Cooper. And that makes sense, right? He did a great job as governor as portraying himself or attempting to portray himself as a middle-of-the-road moderate. Now, you and I know that that wasn't true. You and I know that that is not how Roy Cooper governed, right? Go back and look at COVID, shutting down the state, shutting down businesses. He didn't govern as a moderate at all, but he continually portrayed himself as a moderate. And it's why when you look at his favorability at 47.5%, Donald Trump's at 45, and Tom Tillis is at 26th, that's the situation that's unfolding. And I bring all of that up to go forward. And really, as you are getting involved in this process, which you need to be as a conservative, can't sit on the sidelines and wring your hands of this and go, oh, we're just going to see what happens. That's not an opportunity. If you are a supporter of President Donald Trump and you want him to have a successful 4 years in the Oval Office, a Republican has to win the U.S. Senate race in North Carolina. That's the math. That's plain and simple. So if you are a fan of Trump, you are going to have to get behind a candidate in the primary that not only can win there, but can potentially go up against a Roy Cooper, a Jeff Jackson, or a Wiley Nickel. Right? These are three individuals. Wiley Nickel's already declared. Jeff Jackson, the current attorney general, I would imagine is strongly pondering that situation this morning. According to former Governor Roy Cooper's camp, they are discussing that internally, and we'll make a decision in the next couple of weeks. If he doesn't get into it, that being the former governor, Republicans probably have a stronger shot and a stronger chance. But if he gets into it, it is going to be an unbelievably hard and long uphill battle for Republicans in November of next year. It is hard to beat a guy that has a 47.5% favorable rating. That is a very, very tough nut to crack. There is no question about it. So we'll continue to watch this this process unfold. There's already a couple of declared candidates. We're going to work with them over the next couple of weeks to get them on the show and talk about it. We'll likely see some other candidates. Laura Trump's name is emerging. We'll talk about those details coming up here in just a few minutes. But before that, I want to thank our good friends over at The Law Group for their continued support of The Nick Craig Show. When legal challenges arise, put your trust in The Law Group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, ladies and gentlemen. They are located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or visit their great website at lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. One of the major names that is coming forward to replace Tom Tillis is President Donald Trump's daughter-in-law and North Carolina native, Laura Trump. We'll discuss that and get some of your comments live this morning, 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Coming up a little bit later on this evening, we will be doing our monthly hangout for the month of June. Yes, I am aware that it is in fact July the 1st, but our June hangout will be happening tonight for those that are members of the Nick Craig Show on Patreon. That monthly hangout will be happening at 7 p.m. tonight. You still have some time if you want to get in on that by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. You will have an email or you can log into the Patreon website. The Zoom link is in there. The big discussion tonight is obviously going to be the big, beautiful bill and the discussion continuing as to with Senator Tillis's retirement. Which candidate would you like to see? Look forward to chatting with everybody tonight, 7 p.m. as part of our June monthly hangout. That is one of the perks and benefits of supporting the Nick Craig Show over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Look forward to chatting with everyone tonight. So Laura Trump. She is not a stranger here in North Carolina. She's not a stranger to the political landscape, and she is one of the major candidates that is being, or one of the major names, I should say, that is being thrown around as a potential replacement for Tom Tillis. Now, a couple of things to get out of the way beforehand. As it stands right now, Laura Trump is not a registered voter in North Carolina. So if she is to take this position on, she would have to move to the state, establish residency, and be an eligible candidate. Does she have the ability to raise the money? Absolutely. Does she have the name ID? Absolutely. Does she have the weight of the RNC and the president? No question about it at all. I think she'd be a very strong candidate. The question really comes down to is, does she want it? Right? You'll remember back earlier this year when Marco Rubio was tapped to be Secretary of State. Because Laura Trump is a resident of Florida, she was, of course, eyed for that position. There was a lot of rumor, a lot of discussion earlier this year that she would be appointed and take over Rubio's seat, which would have been a very safe Senate position to take. Right? Florida has a state that was a swing state 15 or 20 years ago, is now solidly red. There's very little issue with Republicans winning statewide elections in Florida. And so the question is, does she want it? Because it's not going to be it's not going to be an easy race for either candidate on either side of the political aisle. This Senate race that we are going to see coming up which, candidate filing begins December 1st, primary March 3rd, general election next November, is likely to be the most expensive United States Senate race in United States history. It is going to be a nasty knockout, drag out battle between Democrats and Republicans. There are going to be hundreds of millions of dollars, especially on the left, flowing in from out of state, from big money activist groups, flooding North Carolina, flooding your television screens, your radio airwaves, your social media. You are going to be bombarded with commentary about this race. She's sure as hell has the name ID to do it, and I think she'd make a really strong candidate. The question is, does she want it? Does she want to put it all on the line for a period of time extending close to a year to only potentially lose, right? That's what she has to look at, and I'm sure that's what her and her father-in-law and other folks around her are looking at. Does she want to put herself in this position because it's going to be a very tough race? So with that, she apparently has been asked to do so. Top of the list, Laura Trump. You would imagine that she will probably make a decision in the next couple of weeks whether she wants the position or not. And if she wants it, the primary is not going to be a problem. She will easily win in the primary. Then it will be on to the general election. I think as it stands right now, she is probably the strongest candidate, if she wants that job, is probably the strongest candidate that is available right now. Now, there are plenty of other Republicans that could run for this position. You've got 11 Republican members in Congress, some names being thrown around, Pat Harrigan, Greg Murphy, other folks there. Then, of course, you look at the North Carolina General Assembly, plenty of strong members there as well. But it really is going to come down to two things in this Senate race. This is how I see it. Two of the main issues are going to be name ID and can you raise money? And that's really what it's going to be. And there's a couple of Republicans that have already announced that they're running. Again, we'll get into those details in the coming weeks and months. We'll be chatting with some of those candidates. While they may be good guys, while they may have strong conservative policies and principles, can they raise hundreds of millions of dollars and do people know their name? That's what this comes down to. Elections, unfortunately, are popularity contests. Whether we like it or not, it's not always the best man or the best woman winning. It's very much a popularity contest. Do I know your name? Do I know who you are? Do I think I know who you are? That's how a lot of this goes, right? Because you look at an electorate that is not always super informed on the issues. You look at an electorate that is very easily swayed by media coverage. And we know that, of course, the media coverage against Republicans is almost always negative. Whether you're talking about local news, whether you're talking about state newspapers like the News and Observer and other outlets like that, or even the vast majority of national news outside of Fox and OAN and Newsmax, you've got a couple of outlets everywhere else, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, the list goes on and on and on. It's just constant negative coverage for Republicans. And that's something that is going to be a hurdle that regardless of who the Republican candidate is, they're going to have to jump over. And they're not only going to have to jump over it, but they're going to have to face that side of it. And also on the other side, beat a Democrat, somebody very popular like a Roy Cooper, somebody with some pretty strong name ID like a Jeff Jackson. But that's what you're going to have to contend. It's a 1-2 punch. The media, which of course hates Republicans, and then an actual Democrat, right? You've got two factors that are going to be bombarding down on you throughout the entire cycle. It is not going to be an easy race here in North Carolina. And so as you see Laura Trump's name continuing to be at the top of that list, this is obviously an attempt by the administration and by those in Republican circles, which, by the way, I'll note, she was the vice chair of the Republican National Committee with Michael Whatley just back a couple of months ago. His name has also been thrown around. The current RNC chairman did great work here for the North Carolina GOP, went up to the RNC last election cycle, delivered 7 of 7 swing states for President Donald Trump, helped him to secure the popular vote for the first time for a Republican in over 20 years. Michael Whatley would be a very strong candidate and contender. But again, it comes down to, do you want it? And that remains, you know, unknown and unseen this morning. There is not any new Republican that has come forward in the last day or two since this news broke on Sunday night that has really jumped to the top of the page. Plenty of rumors. If you've spent any amount of time on social media over the last couple of days, you've probably seen, oh, so-and-so's group is, so-and-so's campaign, inside sources say that they are eyeing the potential for a run at the Senate. That is not anything new. Every single congressman, a bunch of people in the General Assembly, potentially some Council of State members, all of them kind of throwing their hat into this race, or at least potentially throwing their hat into this race. That is nothing surprising. That is nothing shocking. That is nothing new. So you're going to watch that, you know, kind of unfold and take place as well. But again, it comes down to a couple of very basic things. Can you raise money? Can you turn voters out, convince them to vote for you? And then the biggest question of them all, can you win in a general election? And that's really what you're going to watch unfold. I've already had a couple of notes privately on social media. I've gotten some emails as well from individuals that have sent me notes. Oh, who would you back? Who are you supporting? It's too early to tell right now. Right, there's nobody that is declared. There's a lot of rumblings, a lot of rumors of this, that, and the other taking place. It is way too early this morning to go forward and describe who is, the best candidate for this. And there's a possibility that there's multiple quote unquote best candidates. It is very possible that multiple of these individuals are truly the best. The question is just going to be who is willing to take on this fight, who is willing to sludge in this battle, which is going to be a major one here across the state of North Carolina, and who has the stamina to win? Who has the stamina to make this happen and secure not only a Republican victory here in North Carolina, but also on the same time, potentially supporting the ability for the president to serve out his final 2 years in the Oval Office, right? Because it's very obvious and clear that if Democrats get control of either chamber, the House or the Senate, in the midterm elections, that Trump's plans, the Trump agenda, his Make America Great Again plan will essentially be dead in the water. And yeah, he can act via executive order. He can do some things here and there, you know, with executive orders, but all of that stuff is immediately wiped away when you get a Democrat in the Oval Office, which could happen as soon as 2028. I'm not saying I hope that happens. I'm not saying I think that's going to happen. But, you know, I look at this stuff I try to look at this stuff from a very realistic level, right? You saw some of the major issues that Obama made with his executive orders. Because of the split majority in his final couple of years, that allowed Trump, when he got into the Oval Office in 2016, to wipe away a lot of what Obama did, all of that because of executive order. You don't want the president governing via executive order, right? None of that stuff stays. None of that stuff is allowed to stay, or none of that stuff will stay in effect when you get a president from a different party. It just doesn't happen. So you've got this this very interesting process unfolding here in North Carolina, this open primary that is slated to take effect here. And obviously, going back to one of our earlier stories, Democrats seeing this as a huge opportunity for them. And it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Right. Democrats have continued to funnel money into North Carolina to what I would describe as relatively mediocre gains and returns. They have pissed away a lot of money in this state. They tried to push Cal Cunningham over the line. They tried beating Ted Budd. They were unsuccessful in both of those elections in 2020 and in 2022. Big time losses for Democrats, unable to win a Senate race here in the state of North Carolina. The governor race last cycle was a shoo-in for Josh Stein. It would have been the same for any other Democrat running because of the weak candidate that Republicans put forward after the primary. Unfortunately, that being former Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. All in all, Democrats have not been very successful here in the state. Republicans have a supermajority in the Senate, one vote shy of a supermajority in the House, and have the ability to override a lot of the vetoes that are coming from Roy Cooper or from Josh Stein's office. So the picture is painted by some on the left, you know, by Anderson Clayton, who's the head of the North Carolina Democrat Party, by Ken Martin, the head of the DNC, that they've been very successful with wins. And while, yes, they have secured some wins, sure, but the North Carolina Supreme Court is a, 6-2 Republican to Democrat majority? The Republicans overwhelmingly control that court and will do so until 2030, at least at the minimum 2030. The General Assembly has been exclusively controlled by Republicans now since 2012. So you're going on 12, 13 years of Republican majorities in the General Assembly. Yes, governor races have not gone in favor of Republicans here in North Carolina, that's for sure. But the vast majority of Council of State races have, and overall it's been a relatively very successful run for Republicans over the last decade or so. That part is absolutely undisputable. You can go look at the election results. You can go look at the races, whether you're talking about the appeals court, the Supreme Court, two U.S. Senate seats, now holding 11 out of 14 congressional seats in Washington, D.C., out of the United States House. Very successful for Republicans here. Trump has won the state three times. 2016, 2020, and 2024. Very successful elections for President Donald Trump, who, of course, is the top Republican on the ticket. And so as we go through the summer here, obviously the 4th of July coming up on Friday, things are a little bit slow throughout the summer months, no question about that. But really, when you see things begin to kick up is Labor Day. That's essentially the unofficial kickoff of the campaign season and of the election season. You will have Labor Day with a whole bunch of candidates in the field. December 1st, the candidates that want to move forward will officially file for their bid, their nomination. And then March 3rd of next year, you will have voters making their way to voting locations all across the state of North Carolina to determine who they want to back, which candidate they want to support. And then, of course, after that, it is going to be a very long, drawn out, nasty fight as those candidates battle with each other. The Republican and the Democrat battle all the way through the entirety of essentially the entirety of 2026, and then make their way over to the general election in November of next year. So that's really what we've got right now. I don't think that you'll have a strong kind of closing up and wrapping up our comments. I don't think we're going to have an answer immediately as to who the Republican candidate is. Now, you're going to have plenty of people saying that they're going to run. But really what it's going to come down to is who does Trump support, and who does the conservative grassroots, the individuals that vote in primaries, who do they support? And you would imagine that whatever candidate comes forward, if Trump is supporting them, you would assume, at least I would, that the grassroots, more in tune individuals across the state of North Carolina would vote for that same person, right? Because, you know, these individuals, you know, claim to be loyal to Trump. They're pissed off at Tom Tillis for not voting with Trump. You would assume that they would also back the candidate that Trump wants. So I don't know how quickly that's going to happen. Probably not until the latter parts of this month. Maybe it could be as late as Labor Day when you really get this playing out. But we'll see in the next couple of weeks, middle, latter parts of July, whether Roy Cooper is going to run. That could be a significant factor in all of this. And then, of course, we'll wait and see what the Republicans put forward, which candidate do they believe is the best, and then where Donald Trump's alliances and allegiances fall you can imagine if it's his daughter-in-law wants to get into the race that he will have, or she will have his unconditional support, no real argument or surprise there. If it's somebody else, maybe you've got multiple congressmen that go after it. Where does Trump's loyalty lie there? It's going to be a very interesting political cycle here in North Carolina. And again, to note, eyes across the country are going to be watching this race. A lot of influence, a lot of time, and a lot of money is going to be spent in this process. I look forward to walking through it with you and getting, of course, all of your feedback as well. You can join us on social media. Encourage you to do so. You can give me a follow over on X at Nicholas M. Craig. You can check out the Nick Craig Show on Facebook. Got some good commentary on our comments there. Or, of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, Rumble, or X, commenting over there as well. Once again, coming up later tonight, our monthly Zoom hangout. That'll be heading your way at 7 p.m. tonight over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Look forward to chatting with everyone there. Thanks again to The Law Group for their continued support of the show. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll keep a close eye on the U.S. Senate today and have all those details coming up for you tomorrow morning right here on The Nick Craig Show, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7. Wherever you get your podcast, have a great Tuesday.